this concept of being guardians of the lands and of being guardians of that amazing product that is way more than a luxury product. It's part of who we are as a country and as an identity. It's part of our culture. Wine, it's not something that it's, I mean, probably, you know, people like my mother drinks wine every day at lunch and dinner. So, and I mean,
sometimes for breakfast.
Yeah, well, not so much, but my mother, at least. Cristina, my colleague, she drinks.
Olá e bem-vindo. Welcome to The Simple Life, an insider's perspective into Portugal. We already know about Portugal's amazing weather, food and people. In this podcast, we go deeper and meet the real people who make this country so wonderful. Dylan, who has made his life in Portugal, shares an insider's perspective into what makes Portugal the unique, beautiful and amazing country that it is. Join him and his guests every week as they shed some light on the incredible people, culture, history and lifestyle that makes Portugal so appealing. A country where everyone feels like they belong. This podcast is sponsored by Portugal Realty. Welcome to The Simple Life.
On this week's episode, I'm joined by Marta Mendonça. Marta is a citizen of the world and passionate about climate change. She's traveled throughout Europe, Africa, and Asia before settling back home right here in Portugal. We discuss, amongst other things, the wine industry's role in the fight against climate change and Marta's incredible work with the Porto Protocol. Welcome back, or welcome to another episode of Portugal, The Simple Life. I'm really excited to be joined here by Marta Mendonça. Marta, thank you for joining us, and how are you?
Thank you, I'm very well. Thank you for inviting me.
Good, good, good. How is, you're up in the north, so we are separated at the moment by about 250, 70 kilometers maybe. How is everything today in up in the north in Porto?
Well, it's a rainy day. It's not so cold, but it's fine. It's weird life these days. Strange days we're living, but it's fine. I'm quite well.
That's good. That's good. Could you just start off by giving us an introduction about yourself and telling us a little bit more about you?
Yes. So my name is Marta. I am the mother of two little girls. I am 46 years old. In terms of professional background, I've worked almost all my life in sales and marketing. And then about 4 years ago, my life turned upside down and I completely changed my career path, which is really important to me because I love working. So I can say that my career is important to me because I simply love what I do. It's part of the things I do is to work. And so for the last 4 years, I became an executive coach and I sort of woke up to what I call, to a sustainable, more sustainable lifestyle. And so that changed everything. And that led me to where I am today, which is as manager of the Porto Protocol Foundation. And what do I like to do? I like to cook. I like everything that takes me to new places. I love to learn new things. I love silence. And yeah, that's it.
Okay, there's a few things there. How old are your daughters?
7 and 9.
Okay, wonderful. I have a 9-year-old as well, Frederica. And nice. she likes to cook as well already. So
nice, that's very nice.
But now being in Portugal, obviously it's well documented. Food is very important to us in Portugal. And we are travelers. We like to travel the world. I think this has got something to do with our DNA, food and exploring.
Yes. Yeah. I think food is a way of traveling as well. I think I can say I travel every day, not only through my job because of the people I speak to, but also I think I travel through the food I cook because I always cook with spices and it's something that makes me travel. And so I think that's a way of traveling. And I think nowadays, actually, that makes me think that we definitely have to find ways of traveling, like through a book, because chances are we can't move much anyway, so we might as well find alternatives. And I think Portuguese people are very good at that, at finding alternative ways, in finding different ways of doing things.
Yeah. What was the last, what is your favorite sort of, besides Portuguese food, what's your favorite food to cook?
Asian. Asian in general, from actually even more Thai food, I would say. I actually used to have a Thai takeaway many years ago, done at home, of course. I think it's Thai food, yeah. Okay. Anything that has exotic flavors and spices, I'm up for it.
Okay, good. Are there any good Mexican restaurants in Porto, in that area?
I think there is a good Mexican restaurant, but I can't remember. I think the name is Frida.
Okay.
But it's not something I eat so much, so I would not be able to recommend it to you properly.
But you can recommend a good Thai restaurant, maybe?
No, because I cook it.
Okay. Okay, so the best Thai restaurant in Porto is Marta's place.
Yes.
Okay. That's interesting. If my wife hears that, we're going to have a problem. She's going to say to us, we need to go visit Marta. But yes. Marta, when we spoke previously, you mentioned that you considered yourself a citizen of the world and you did a lot of traveling and worked abroad. Tell us a little bit about your experiences being away from Portugal.
Well, as I was telling you before, I think being a citizen of the world, although that might sound a bit pomposo, I don't know the name in English, but the fact is, for me, the world was always an attraction in itself. More than Portugal, as I was telling you, and I value Portugal much more nowadays than I did throughout the rest of my life. And I started very early traveling with my mother because we lived in Macau in China, next to Hong Kong, twice. And I think maybe that's when, and I also inherited it from her, her adventurous spirit and her love for traveling. So I think I've had it since I was a little girl, and I was lucky enough to start very early. I remember when we lived in Macau, we went to Nepal, and until today, I remember the amazing places where we were, and I don't have a good memory. So, and those memories stayed in my mind, and I think it had a lot of impact in the way, in this love I have for travel, and the eagerness I had to travel for such a long time, and that made me go abroad when I studied in London. And the moment I had the opportunity, I went backpacking. I took the opportunity because it was an opportunity. I find it an opportunity. At one point, I was leaving a job because the company was reducing its workforce. And I took that opportunity as a chance of going backpacking. And that changed my life. That completely changed my life even more, because if I had stayed in Portugal, chances are my career would just be a normal career and my view of the world would be the same. The fact that I went backpacking on my own for 6 months, well, 1 month I had a friend with me in Southeast Asia, I think until today it made me part of who I am, and it just kept that adventurous spirit alive. But then I went even further. As I mentioned, I was backpacking in Asia for 6 months. Then when I came, and that's why I love Thai food. I can't remember if we said that when you were recording or not, but I actually had a Thai takeaway from home because I knew I was coming without a job. So I learned how to cook Thai food in Thailand, and because I had to find ways of survival. So when I came back, I cooked. But then I wanted to keep on traveling, and so I went to work abroad in different countries in Africa, and again that changed my world again, because Africa was everything, and I can't wait for my children to be old enough for me to take them in a safari, because experiencing the wildlife, okay, even if it was from a car, from a jeep sitting and with a guard making sure that you would be in silence and not leaving the car. But Africa, the feeling of Africa, the smell of Africa, the people, especially Botswana, which is one of the countries where I was for 4 months, was was overwhelming. And I love this feeling of just, because it's a feeling. It's not just about the people, it's about the lands. And it's just so good to experience it. So I've been in many places. I'm privileged enough to have been in many places, but Africa, if we can put it as a concept, as an experience in itself, though it might mean various countries, because I was in several countries in Africa, was for me the most impactful feeling I had in terms of traveling abroad. And then I started a very quiet life when I came back.
It's amazing that Africa had that. I'm from South Africa originally.
So
safaris, I mean, from a young age, we would go with my grandmother to Kruger National Park, which is one of the big game reserves in
South Africa. I've been there.
And that was part of our upbringing. And it's funny because for me, it's the opposite way around, you know, having spent so much time there. But the feeling of Portugal for me is something different and beautiful and a thing that I sometimes try to describe and put it into words, but it's difficult. So yeah, you mentioned that you appreciate Portugal more now than you did then. Why? Can you explain that feeling?
Yes, I think it was due to COVID because I couldn't travel. And so that made me, although I already traveled a bit in Portugal, the spirit with which I went traveling after COVID, after the first lockdown, was one of vigorousness of having to travel and having to know new places. And so I had to fulfill it because it was going crazy. I am having that right now again, but there's nothing I can do about it. And so the spirit with which I went to these new places in Portugal, and some of them actually I was going again and again, like Alentejo, which is the first place where I went after lockdown, and Alentejo is very special to me. But so I saw it with new eyes. I saw it maybe like a tourist, as if I was seeing it for the first time, like someone that had actually been in a prison, like we were all were in a way. And so there was such eagerness and there was such beauty in what I saw. And I think the thing that I value the most about Portugal, I valued it more, which is the fact that you have 800 kilometers and you have an immense and diverse landscape. And chances are you don't have such diversity in such a few kilometers in many places in the world. And this is unique.
And yeah, when you talk about South Africa, I always say to people, Portugal is so similar to South Africa, but just smaller, you know. So South Africa, to get to, you know, you can go from a place like the Cape to the Karoo, which is like the Alentejo. But it'll take you 5 hours to get there. Whereas here in Portugal, you know, from where I am, I drive an hour and I'm in the Alentejo and it's perfect. So
yes,
the diversity is something that is so amazing and beautiful here.
Yes, that it is.
Did you see anywhere, did you go anywhere brand new that completely surprised you this time around?
There is a place that it was not the first time I went there, but it's very recent to me. And it's one of the most striking views I've ever seen, not only in Portugal maybe, but which is in Castelo Rodrigo, Figueira de Castelo Rodrigo, north of Portugal. And one of the reasons why I like it has a lot to do with the reason why I like Alentejo. I love silence. I love pure silence. And I love a landscape that you can't see the end of it. And when you go to the castle in Figueira de Castelo Rodrigo, in Castelo Rodrigo, in Portugal, because there's a similar name in Spain, you get that. You get absolute silence and a view that has no end. And it's so beautiful. And it's a natural beauty. So it's not... Because more and more I appreciate nature way more than cities. And this is pure nature and so beautiful. So that was, I think that was one of the most, that was one of the biggest surprises in Portugal for me, yeah. And then Alentejo, always Alentejo. Alentejo is always beautiful and there's always something new to know in Alentejo.
Yeah, Alan Teja, we've spoken about so many times on the podcast. Everyone's got some kind of connection to the Alan Teja. Have you ever been to Monsanto in Beira Interior or Sortelia?
No, I think that's Sortelia is one of the historic villages, yeah?
Yeah, no, so I you have Sortelia and Monsanto are quite close to each other, and they're both castles on two big mountains, and they were very important castles when we used to defend ourselves against the Spanish. And you can see, you should go there, because from the top of either of those castles, it's just 4 miles. You can see right into Spain. It's just beautiful, beautiful. And the way that you're describing that Castillo Rodrigo, it's the same kind of feeling that I felt in Monsanto and Sortelia. Yeah. So you should check those out sometime when you get a chance.
I will.
Yeah. You've brought up a couple of things, silence and calm and quiet. And you talked about after studying and traveling and working abroad, you came back to a quieter, calmer life. Yeah, tell me a bit about that. Why is Portugal like that? Why do you feel like it's quiet and calm and this peaceful place?
Well, actually, I meant quiet in the sense that my life calmed down, not so much that it's for me, it's two different things. I love silence, love it, the pure silence. That does not necessarily mean that I like a quiet life. For me, those are completely different concepts, okay? But in regards, well, I got a quiet life. Why is Portugal a quiet life? If you want, Dylan, more and more I believe that less is more. But again, more nowadays than I did 10 years ago. I understand it so well. And why is Portugal a simple life? If you choose to have a simple life, and if you choose to value what can be a simple life, you realize that, and this expression exists, that the best things in life are for free. Some might not be for free, but are far from it. If you want to go to the beach on a walk, or if you want to hug a tree, or go to a forest, or go to a park, or eat good food, seasonal, local, that's a simple life, and that's the best you can take out of life. It's not going to a shopping center or buying things or seeing the lights of the city. Those are simple things and simple life, and you can have that in Portugal, and it doesn't cost you that much. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe some people have always appreciated that. I've learned to appreciate that and to realize that that's what quality of life is. It's not about things. It's about less. It really is. And when you start to cherish that, you start to have more time, actually, to appreciate more.
How did you move on to Porto Protocol? How did that start? You mentioned a change in mind shift from career to sustainability. Tell us a bit about that journey.
Well, actually, me landing in Porto Protocol started 4 years ago, in the sense that that's when I woke up to sustainability, into a more simple life, as we were talking about, and to what I call mindful consumerism. And so 4 years ago, by chance, I went to this, not by chance, while I was looking into new businesses with a friend, because again, my life had changed. I left the last company where I worked in marketing. And I was looking for a new business, and I went to a shop in Lisbon called Maria Granel. And she sells Eunice, she's the owner of the shop, and she's an inspiring lady and a force for good in terms of business and in terms of everything. And she sells bulk products, organic bulk commodities and products of every day. And that was the first time I came across something called zero waste movement. I don't know if you've ever heard about it. Which has to do with you as an individual, you minimize your waste in your daily life, in everything. And that was the beginning of a path that went through too many stages in my life. And I think it only happened because I generally say that in my previous life, when I worked in marketing, I was a polluter. And so many things changed in the last 4 years, and the waking up to mindful, becoming a mindful consumer was really, really important to me. And it became very important to me personally because I completely changed my lifestyle completely. And for example, one thing that had a lot of influence was becoming aware and conscious of the impact that especially the fast fashion industry has in terms of pollution and in terms of and socially as well. The conditions, for example, that many workers that work for the fast fashion industry have, the level of pollution, the amount of clean water they use to produce, that had a huge impact in me, especially an event called the collapse of a building called Rana Plaza in 2013 in Bangladesh. It was like I had wake-up calls, but this was the bigger wake-up call for me to realizing that the way we live in terms of consumerism is completely unsustainable. And so it evolved. And for the last 3 years, tomorrow is 1 year since I've been in Portugal, Porto Protocol. So, but for 3 years, I worked as an executive coach. And because sustainability became so important to me, and because I love companies, I must say, I love working in a company, and we'll get there. I felt the need, and because I know companies, okay, let me take the sustainability messages to companies as well. And so together with another force of nature called Mãe Natureza, Marta Machado, she has a blog and an eco shop called Mãe Natureza. We started going, because she's an environmental engineer, we started conducting workshops on sustainable consumerism in companies as well. And so sustainability evolved from a personal choice to a professional choice as well. But it's important to say that when I'm talking about sustainability, and this is very important, there are three pillars to sustainability: social, economic, and environmental. It's not never just one, okay? And so it evolved. And because the truth is, although I loved the time I was working on my own, in my own brand, which is Marta Pelo Mundo, and that still exists in a way, it will always exist, and it had existed since I went backpacking, I missed company. I missed working in a company because I missed the adrenaline. I had never had a problem in working for someone else. And because I'm not very disciplined, working for someone else makes me more disciplined. And I loved it. But I had decided in my head I would never go back to marketing. And if I was to go back to a company, it would be working in sustainability, because it had become so much more important in my life, and it's a value that is absolutely crucial to me as we speak. And also because climate change, in this path that I embraced in the last 4 years, becoming aware of climate change, that this is a reality, and that it will affect the way my children will be adults, became such a responsibility for me, because it became important to me that one day I'll look them in the eye and they'll know I did something about it. And that really became important to me. It's not easy because I've made many changes in my lifestyle, and that affects them. And they don't always take it lightly, and they don't like it because it affects things that they like. But for me, It's a quest that I embraced. And so the opportunity arose for me to embrace Porto Protocol. And because I believe in individual power, I thought that if this was so important to me on a personal basis, using just my voice, if I could amplify it through Porto Protocol, and it's not about me, it's about this message that climate change is real and that we have to change and we have to act, It ticked all the dots. And that's how I embraced Porto Protocol.
Okay, fascinating. I see it in a lot of conversations. I do think it's something that we have here in Portugal, where there is an appreciation for what we have around us in terms of our the nature, our this beautiful country, and we do want to leave it to the next generation, which I think is a beautiful part of. Of course, we can get better, and there needs to be more awareness. But I do find there's a general attitude here of people want to leave they want to leave this place the same way for their children and for the next generation. Tell us a bit about Porter Protocol. Most people will have heard of it, but just tell us. Tell us a bit about what it is, how it works, how you amplify that message with what you're doing.
So we are a foundation founded by Taylor's Port that only has port wine along with other businesses in tourism, for example. And we were founded and created in the middle of two conferences that took place in Porto last year, Climate Change Leadership Solutions for the Wine Industry. And the vision behind, which has to do with the vision of our CEO, Adrian Bridge, has to do with the fact that there's no time and no need for companies or individuals to look for solutions for climate change on their own. So we always look at climate change from a solutions perspective and never from a problem perspective. The problem we take for granted, and we believe, and we're just not about us believing. We know that the solutions are out there. There are so many solutions that are either already being implemented or can gain scale to make a much faster response to climate change. And so this is the spirit with which we were created, and one of collaborative sharing. So if people share what they are doing instead of going and spend time and resources and just keeping it from themselves, we can do this much faster and much better. And so what we are trying to build is a platform. And when I mean a platform, I literally mean a digital platform filled with climate solutions spread across the wine value chain. And when I mean wine value chain, I mean from grape to glass. That means that, for example, if you are a wine producer or even a retailer or a packaging producer, and you want a solution, for example, in terms of water management, that it will enable you to save water and manage your water in a much more efficient fashion, you can come to Porto Protocol, where you have a network of people and of companies from around the world, mostly related to wine, that are doing it. And chances are, with them, you can learn how to do it. You can learn, and that's the type of solutions we have. You can learn what were the lessons that company learned by doing that, by using that specific solutions. What challenges did they face? How much did it cost? What are the next steps? So it really shortens your learning and researching time and resources. And that's what we want to do. This makes us speak to different people every day. I was telling you earlier that I literally travel every day in my work. Every day we speak with people from South Africa, from Argentina, from the US, from Portugal. And that's amazing because I travel every day in my work. And I meet absolutely inspiring people because I meet, well, mostly wine producers is a fact, that do believe in climate change and that want to address it. Some are just starting to address it. Some are champions. And the amazing thing is all these people, all these companies can learn from each other. And that's exactly what we want to do, is to facilitate and promote this collective action and this collaborative sharing. That's our mission. Of course, that means that besides asking for companies and people to share what they're doing, we also have to do more and also give in return, so to speak. And that has led us to engage in projects, either on an individual basis or with certain companies, or trying to position ourselves in projects that we will create more next year, because it was has just been a year since we are doing this, and we are two, by the way. It's me and Christina, my colleague, and trying to engage in products that always have to do with climate solutions for the wine industry.
Well, okay. Let's just give a quick shout out to your colleague, Christina. If you're listening, Christina, thank you for all of your hard work and keep up the good work. Marta, but I mean, there's a few things here which, again,
I love, and we've spoken about it in the podcast before. There is a habit, a spirit of collaboration in Portuguese people. We're stronger when we're together, as yes. opposed to individual. But I just think this is phenomenal because we're talking about a very competitive industry.
Yes.
And a group of people who are usually competitors with each other, but now they're looking, yeah. going, let's share information together. Yeah. It's a wonderful thing that you've managed to establish.
Yes, it's an amazing vision. We're still building it, and it's a very fragmented industry. That's one of the challenges indeed. And we want to do it worldwide because this is not just for Portugal. We have members from all over the world. We have many members from South Africa, for example. And that's what makes it even more amazing, trying to build a collective voice and based on collaborative sharing worldwide from Portugal is an amazing vision that we are trying to accomplish indeed, yeah. And yes, you have to overcome, and that's actually something that my CEO has said since the beginning, which has to do with the fact that this is not, climate change is not something you should be competing over. And this makes business sense. If this means that you are managing your resource better, because if you have a better water management system, it's not something you're going to compete about. So it's something that you can share and that others can learn from. And you learn something in return that will also make you more efficient. You will compete in the products, fair enough. And that's where you should be competitive about, not about fighting climate change. And that's an important message.
Yeah, well, I mean, the long-term, the sustainability, and again, this is something where I do find it's something in Portugal where we do enjoy the now and we enjoy the moment, but we also think about tomorrow and we think about the next generation and we think about how this is going to affect them. If all of these companies are looking at the future, it's better for everybody because it means that we can still carry on doing what we do in terms of producing wine and amazing wines. Are you proud that this has sort of come out of Portugal and that this is sort of being birthed here?
Yes, I'm very proud. And I think, again, as you were saying, we work better together. I mean, we saw that in COVID, how well that went. I think two amazing things out of Portugal came out, which is first, we work better together, and something bad happened and we just came up with a solution. But in regards to your question, yes, I'm very proud. And it makes sense because the way we live wine has everything to do with what we as an organization are doing. Because most, as you probably know, we have thousands of wine companies in Portugal. Some are micro companies that have been in the family for ages, and we want them to continue in the family for ages. So we understand this concept of being guardians of the lands and of being guardians of that amazing product that is way more than a luxury product. It's part of who we are as a country and as an identity. It's part of our culture, wine. It's not something that probably you know people like my mother drinks wine every day at lunch and dinner. So, and I mean,
sometimes for breakfast.
Yeah, well, not so much, but my mother at least. Christina, my colleague, she drinks wine. I don't drink wine so much, not on a daily basis, but she drinks wine at lunch and dinner because it's something cultural. Yeah. And so.
And we have good wine.
We don't have good wine. We have amazing wine. And so, again, so diverse. I mean, if you drink a wine from Alentejo or Down or Lisbon or Douro, I mean, Vinho Verde, they're all so diverse. I mean, again, you have these 800 kilometers of land and you have so much diversity. And again,
I mean, I get what you're saying. It's something that's so entwined in the fabric of, for us as a culture in Portugal, but it's worldwide, that it makes sense that the wine industry should be driving one of the big drivers of climate change because it's dependent on what happens to the climate.
And let me tell you another thing that I've learned since I embraced Porto Protocol, especially the Douro region, something that I hear every day. that Douro in itself, the Douro region as a wine region, is a lesson in terms of climate resilience, because the soil is so inhospitable, it's so harsh, that the fact that you have a crop like grapes, like vines, growing there, and many times without, because there are many people practicing what we call dry farming, which means that vineyards are not irrigated with no water. This is amazing, and it's again a lesson in resilience, and it's like walking the talk in a way, because we have and not just in Douro, of course, we have Alentejo that has so little water. So grapes are an extremely resilient crop, and it's an agricultural product at the end of the day. And you might have listened this or not, but indeed, I mean, more and more soils are seen as one of the potential solutions for climate change. So I think there's so much, and also there are many companies in Portugal that are doing amazing work in terms of climate change and of sustainability as a whole. I'll give you the example of Alentejo, for example, and we have many of our members, I think it's worth saying their names. Of course, you could speak from others abroad, but let's speak what is being done in Portugal. You have Casa Relvas, Casa de Celo, Symington, Taylors, you have Soalheiro, Coalheiros. There are so many companies that are working in completely different ways to address this matter. Sometimes the reason why they do it is not necessarily because of climate change. It's because it makes sense and it's the right thing, because you want to respect the land. If you want the land to give you the best wines, you have to work with it, not manipulate it or go against it. So there are many, many companies that are champions in fighting climate change. So we are in an amazing position to be doing this from Portugal.
Wonderful. Wow. That's it's very, very inspiring. It's just wonderful to hear how excited and passionate you are about this. We're seeing something here, which is something that I wanted to ask you. You see it happening in so many different ways. We have this little country that has got a loud voice, and is always surprises people and is impacting the world. How does that make you feel? Do you feel that as well?
Yes, I feel that in many ways, and sometimes it's not recognized enough. I think what we were talking about, this ability we have of turning things around, of always finding a solution. I know it's not a beautiful expression, which is desenrasque. I don't know what you call it, for better or for worse. The fact is we have it, it's in our DNA. And so I think we're able to use it in so many ways. And the fact that we are generous people, we give, and again, we saw this, and it's not about government nor institution, it starts in us, individually, we have that, and that's amazing, and that's why, but I think the fact that for a long time, and I told you that about myself, that we didn't value what was ours, didn't give justice to our voice, or to the Portuguese voice, and to the Portuguese products, and to the Portuguese everything. And now we're finally starting to value that and being more confident about who we are as a people, about what we do and how we do it, makes it easier for us to promote what we're doing. And that's why I think we are starting to have more echo to this voice of ours. And I mean, we can see that in tourism. We have an amazing country. I was telling you, I cherish Portugal more. I mean, everyone loves coming here. And again, some love more Porto, others Lisbon, others Alentejo. But it's way more than Algarve now, because we were just famous for Algarve and Porto, I must say. But now it's becoming more diverse again, and that's amazing. Though we need to respect that, and we need to respect as a people, we need to cherish it. But cherish also means respecting it and preserving it,
Yeah.
And that's something that we have to learn as well, how to do.
I might be putting you in a difficult situation now because you've got Porto Protocol there behind you. What's your favorite Portuguese wine? What's your favorite Portuguese wine region?
It's Douro.
It's Douro?
Yes. Yeah. There's no doubts about that. That was an easy question, because if you had asked me what was my favorite Portuguese wine, I could not answer that. Because I work with different producers.
Yeah, you'll end up upsetting somebody. Yeah, okay. Okay, so Douro is the region for you.
Yeah. Yes.
Marta, what are three things that you want people to remember and take away from our conversation?
Well, the first thing is you should never underestimate your individual power and the power you have to be the change you want to see in the world. That's the first thing, your individual power. We can be everything we want. I mean, be the change you want to be in the world is actually issued. It's from Gandhi. You have Nelson Mandela. I mean, you have loads of examples in the world that should make you believe in your individual power. So that's the first thing. And this goes out to not just about climate change, which I'll go there, but to everything in life, everything you want to you do in life. Don't complain or don't ask the others to change. It starts in yourself. And from a consumerism perspective, with an euro, you are making a vote. You are using your individual power. Each time you spend money, you are using your individual power. So do not underestimate it. The second thing is about climate change. And climate change is a reality. It's not far away. I can tell you that I've spoken to many producers in California throughout the fires that took place about 2 months ago. And many of them were telling me that they were feeling climate change firsthand, because so many people are still deniers and still think that it's something that is it's a faraway reality. And it is not. If you were to speak to one of these producers that lost their crops, that lost harvest, the whole year's harvest, they would tell you that it is a reality. But the important thing is that the solution starts in yourself. Again, it's about individual power. And that's what I'd like the second message to be. Don't talk about climate change if you don't walk the talk. There are many things we can do individually to tackle climate change. You can, for example, eat less meat. And there is no fundamentalism in this. I'm not telling you to become a vegetarian nor just going on a bicycle, but look at your waste bin to reduce your waste. Do eat less meat. I mean, take a bicycle one day, turn off the lights in your home or your computer. There are many things that you can do to walk the talk, to start reducing your carbon footprint on a daily basis as we speak today. So that's the second message. And the third one that has everything again to do with Porto Protocol, although what I was telling you before, that we individually, we can change. That's part of Porto Protocol, again, because as long as you start tackling climate change, and it can be, again, with the energy at home or in your business. But the third thing that has to do with Porto Protocol and has to do with Portugal, we work better together. So let's share what we're doing. Let's work together. There are things, yes, you can continue to be competitors, but there's so much we can learn from each other. And it's so inspiring. As I told you before, I get inspired every day with the people. I'm so privileged for that. Me and Cristina, we're so privileged because of the people we talk to. And it's quite inspiring to speak to people that are doing things and that really believe in this path that we all embraced. And so work together. Let's work together. Let's build a voice together. And because many individual voices are one huge, big voice, big collective voice.
Yeah, lovely. Marta, how can people listening find you online and follow your work?
Well, they can go to Porto Protocol website. That's the easiest way, because our climate talks that I was telling you before are there. Social media, because I told you we're two, so we're getting better. But I think our website is quite it's quite up to date always. Our LinkedIn page as well, Porto Protocol, is always very up to date. Our YouTube channel has all these talks I was telling you about, and that's the easiest way. Okay. That's by far. And of course, listen to this podcast if you want to learn about Porto Protocol as well.
Excellent. So we'll put links in the show notes of the podcast so that people can just get in touch and stay tuned to the exciting things that you and Christina and Adrian are doing at Porto Protocol.
Yeah.
Marta, we've touched on it a bit earlier, but maybe you can just elaborate. We'll just repeat it or talk a bit more about it. But a question that we ask all of our guests: Portugal, the simple life, why?
Because as I mentioned before, less is more. A walk on the beach, a walk to a park, good food, local season, doesn't require a lot. Just you being open to it.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you so much, Marta. I've loved this conversation. Good
Thank
luck with
you.
Everything going forward. Thank you for all this work that you're doing. It's an amazing, amazing thing. And good luck with everything.
Thank you. Thank you, Dylan, for inviting me and being an opportunity to talk about Porto Protocol.
You're welcome. And for now, bye-bye. I'm going to let you call it.
All right. Let's wrap it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So thank you once again to Marta, and thank you to all of you for listening. Please subscribe, share with your friends, give us a thumbs up, and please leave a comment or a review. We'd love to hear from you. And as we say in Portugal, Feliz Natal. Welcome to the simple life.